Unleashing the power of your pets. Pet power. Talk radio with bites. We're Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network. Let's talk pets.
Hello, this is Michelle Fern, host of Best Bets for Pets on PetLiveRadio.com. I am delighted to be at the Purina Better with Pets Summit. I am looking forward to hearing everything on the panels and meeting a lot of different people here. There's a lot of people from the internet world, a lot of bloggers and internet idols and all these interesting folks, as well as various individuals that specialize in animal behavior, understanding animal language, you know, understanding how to read your cat, your dog, explaining how people can enhance their lives with their pets, and also how people that are handicapped as well. It's a wonderful summit, and I really am excited to be here. Thank you, Purina, for inviting us at Pet Life Radio, and stay tuned for a lot of great interviews. Hello, everybody. This is Michelle Fern, and I am at the Better with Pets Summit by Purina. I'm with Arlie Reynolds. How are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, it's great to be here.
So for everybody listening, tell them a little bit about what you spoke about during the summit today.
Well, we have a community up in rural Alaska that's 300 miles off the road system that has done some great things by basically reintroducing the native culture back to young people in the village using dogs. Dogs were always a big part of native culture. They're how people obtained food, how they transported themselves. They were used to keep people warm and companionship and even protection traditionally. But with the advent of a lot of modern technology, dogs started to disappear, and with it, a big part of the culture went too. So by bringing dogs back in and getting young people to work with them, it's helped bring them out of their shell and learn a lot about their culture and sort of give them purpose and confidence.
I believe from this model, from losing a small village and how well the dogs helped people from this model, that can really be embraced by larger cultures, schools, that sort of thing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that we were designed to spend our lives with dogs, and I think that they help in so many ways. I mean, when you have a dog, you know you have to go out and walk them. It helps build structure in your life, but it also builds emotional wellness, and I think that that's applicable in rural Alaska just as well as it is in downtown Manhattan.
I agree with you completely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. I'm with Ilana Reisner at the Better with Pets Purina Summit, and we just listened to you on a panel. For everybody listening, please tell us a little bit more about what you do.
I'm a veterinarian who specializes in behavior, and my practice is limited to behavior problems. So I go to people's homes, or they come to me less frequently, with dog and cat behavior problems ranging from biting, which is probably the most common thing, to anxiety problems, house training issues, cats that are eliminating outside the litter box or are aggressive with each other. Anything that you can name is what I go to see.
I think the services that you provide are, there's no word for it. It's amazing because there's so many. We get letters all the time, emails all the time, Pet Life Radio. How do I help with this aggressive dog? How do I help with that aggressive dog? Now, you also have a blog people can read about more if they can't have you come to their home.
I have a Facebook page that also feeds into Twitter. So the address, the Facebook page name is Reisner Veterinary Behavior and Consulting Services. It's a mouthful, but I try to post once a week a pearl about behavior, some tidbit of information, and I try to post a peeve about behavior, something that I wish would change. And then I add lots of links and videos.
Okay, one last peeve. I, as having pets my whole life, two dogs and a cat right now, I firmly believe you could never 100% trust your dog with a child or just trust the dog. Like people say, oh, my dog, you know, they won't bite you, don't worry. I always think there's that small chance. That's my personal opinion. You, as an expert, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. I have one thought I want to convey is that we did a study when I was at University of Pennsylvania looking at people who were just in the waiting room with their dogs, and we surveyed them about their knowledge and practices about dog behavior. And what we found was that there was a general lack of knowledge about what's safe and what's not safe in terms of dogs. So, for example, if a dog is rolling over on her back, if I remember correctly, 43% of the people we surveyed felt that it was safe then to rub her belly. From a behavioral point of view, we know that a dog that rolls on her back is sometimes saying, please leave me alone, because I'm very, very frightened of you. And it's a request to disengage. It's called a calming signal. So the fact is that in some of the studies that have been done recently, including our study with the Children's Hospital, of young children that are bitten by dogs they know, about 60% of those bites were right in the presence of a parent or a grandparent. Why? Probably because we all think that those positive interactions are safe. Just being next to a dog, hugging, kissing, lying with a dog, and so on, can be scary to the dog and can result in a bite.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. This is Michelle Fern, and we are at the Better with Pets Summit hosted by Purina. I'm with Kent Fife, and he has his service dog, Mike. Welcome, Kent.
Hello, everybody.
Now, this is a special summit held by Purina Better with Pets, and you are here on behalf of America's Vet Dogs to explain a little bit more about working dogs. Tell us about yourself and why you have a working dog.
Well, I actually retired from the Army back in 1996. I was a senior NCO, Sergeant First Class, and when I retired, I had some medical issues, so they shot me up to Walter Reed, and they fixed me, and then 10 days later, I was a civilian. And I coped quite well, actually, for the first 4 or 5 years, and then 9/11 hit. And when 9/11 hit, my mind kind of digraded or disgraded, whatever. You know the words. But the bottom line is I started having a lot more issues, medical issues, my neck and my back, and I started having what they call cardiogenic syncope at the time. And that means that that's a really fancy word for I fall down, I go boom, I make a mess, with no warning. So my doctors, after working with me and trying a whole bunch of different medicines and everything, turned around and said, we've heard a lot of stuff about service dogs. Why don't you look into seeing if you can get a service dog? At the time, this is 6 years ago now, it was not as common as it is today. So I called all over the place, and I finally found America's Vet Dogs, who gave me a service dog for nothing. A lot of people want to charge money for the training. They want you to bring your own dog. Vet Dogs is part of the Guide Dog Foundation. So they've been around since 1946. The Guide Dog Foundation has. So what happened was they invited me down to their campus after working, figuring out what I need. They trained a dog especially for me, and that dog's name was Iris. The fifth night I was down in class learning how to work with this dog, that dog actually woke me up from having one of my seizures while I was somewhat asleep. That changed my life. Because of her waking me up, they were able to figure out that it wasn't the heart that was the problem, where I've had 7 heart surgeries because of the heart, where they've gone in and burned out different parts of the heart trying to stop it from doing what it was doing. But they were able to figure out, because the dog woke me up before the event actually took place. So what happened was they changed my meds, they changed everything. I got my driver's license back, I got my life back. I started being able to go out on my own without having to have somebody with me all the time. Not only did Iris help me with balance and mobility and, you know, hearing and some other issues that I have, she helped me from being able to precursor the actual events. They can't train a dog to actually do that. They train the dog to react to the event. But she picked up immediately beforehand. So it changed my life. This year, well, actually it was last year, Iris got bit by a fake service dog on a train. That person got arrested. But Iris got her own form of PTSD, so she could no longer do her job properly without me having a lot of trouble out in the community. So Vet Dogs came to me and said, we're going to ask you to retire Iris and we're going to train another dog for you. So I went through the whole process again of getting, you know, the medical, and because they want to know what current medical is, not what I had when I got Iris. So I have new issues, and they trained another dog, and that would be Mike, who you see here with me now. And Mike turned around. He's trained for all the seizure alerts, so if I go out, he pulls an alarm. If I'm at home alone, he hits 911 button. He helps me with balance and mobility. He picks things up for me and brings them to me because my left side goes numb. He also turns around, helps me with some hearing issues because I don't hear very well sometimes. So high-pitched noises and stuff like that, he'll alert me to, and things like that. I mean, he's an amazing dog. But a lot of that stuff that Iris wasn't able to do, Mike now does. So it's an amazing organization to think that they work with you as you get older and as things change, they help train the dog to make sure that the dog is doing what you need it to do. Absolutely amazing story.
Okay, two things. I see Mike, he's laying down and relaxing. It looks like to me, but I know that's not the case. So tell people, for everybody out there, most people know a little bit about working dogs, but tell them some what they should never do and how they should respect a working dog. And then I also want to know if on America's Vet Dogs, I know that they do a lot of donations through certain food purchases, certain companies, so maybe you can mention a little bit about that too.
Well, I'm not up to date on all of the current companies that are working with them. I know that certain companies, they have a food that every time somebody buys it, money goes directly to Vet Dogs. There are a number of companies out there. If you're in the pet store and you see somebody with a soldier that's got a missing leg, one of our friends, Dan, whose picture is on that, it means that they've co-branded and they're doing marketing back and they're paying some money into Vet Dogs, helping them stay afloat, because they don't take any money from the veteran, they don't take any money from the government. Everything they do is by private donation. So if somebody wants to give, they can go to the website, they can give there, they can call up, they can do all sorts of different ways. They can run fundraisers. I mean, it's an amazing program. It costs about $50,000 to get a dog to this point. I think, brain damage here, I believe you said something about Mike looking like he's out.
Let's get back to that. I know quite a bit about working dogs because I've been educated. Every time I'm at the Global Pet Expo, I interview, you know, whoever's there, the vet that's there with the working dogs, so I learn more and more. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that are listening that, you know, oh, I see working dogs and they're so cute, I want to pet them, or how should they be respected? And also, yeah, Mike looks like he's sleeping, but tell me what he's really doing.
Well, you'll notice that Mike sits right up against me all the time. He's right there. If I went down on the ground right now, within a second or two, he would be up and pulling my alarm, letting people know that I'm out. That's what he is doing. One word and he's up. I can have him moved like that. He's not actually sleeping. He's just resting. But as far as service dogs are concerned as a whole, the big thing is it's just like a wheelchair, a cane, or anything else. Ignore the dog. Talk to the person. And if you're talking to the person and you really want to pet the dog, or you want to talk to the dog, talk to the person and say, can I pet the dog? Can I talk to the dog? A lot of people don't realize that petting is bad, yes, because Mike can't do his job if he's paying attention to you. But most people think, oh, I can talk to Mike, though. And they sit there and they go, oh, cute dog, cute dog, cute dog. And they try to get his attention because they want him to look. And he's doing his job. He's working with me. It would be like me coming into your station and saying, hey, how you doing? And you're trying to do a show. It just doesn't work. So you have to allow the dog to be able to do their job. So always ignore the dog and talk to the person. That's the most simple way to think about working with a service dog. Now, when his vest is off, it's different rules, but dogs like Mike work 24/7. They get all of their attention from their handler. They get their food, their loving, and everything from the handler. That's why they stay so focused on the handler. And a lot of people don't realize that. They think, oh, the vest is off, it means we can play, roll around and stuff like that. And that's fine if I or whomever the handler is says, hey, it's great, go for it. But again, always talk to the handler first.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Kent. And thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
This is Michelle Fern. I'm at the Prina Better With Pet Summit. I'm with Courtney Dasher, and she is the proud pet parent of Tuna. Tell everybody, if they don't know who Tuna is, tell them who Tuna is.
Well, Tuna is my little rescue pup. He is he is 5 years old, and I got him when he was 4 months old, and he didn't have teeth at the time. And his teeth grew, and I started taking a photo a day, and now he has an Instagram following of 1.6 million.
Now, I happen to be one of those followers, and I think it's Tuna Melts My Heart, is that right?
Correct, Tuna Melts My Heart. It's a play off words, because his name is Tuna, and he melts people's hearts.
Okay, I saw him, and the first thing I thought, I saw him across the room, and I thought, that looks like Tuna. Now, do you get that all the time?
Sometimes. I think that if you're a loyal follower, you would be able to recognize him because his teeth are not always showing, and that is his most signature distinction. But people who know him and have seen him in all different forms will recognize him. But if you don't follow him, you might not realize that it's Tuna.
Okay, I feel special then because I recognized him. Now, is he a Chihuahua mix or because he's tall? He's taller than I thought.
Yeah, so I was told by two vets when I first got him that he is a mix between a Chihuahua and a Dachshund. So I call him a Chiweenie.
That's what would be my guess.
Yeah.
Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Thank okay. you.
I'm at the Better with Pets Summit, hosted by Purina. I'm with Reagan McGowan, and she is at this exciting exhibit for how to tell if your dog is nervous, reading your pet.
Yeah, so we're looking at how we can assess emotions in our pets, so both positive and negative, but of course we're erring more on trying to identify how to look at positive states in our pets, because we know a lot about stress and anxiety. But we know pets can be in a really positive state of joy and happiness as well, so we're looking at how to read that. So we're looking here to demonstrate several physiological measures. The first thing we're using is a thermal camera. So we know that just like people, if you go through a different emotional state, like let's say I was really nervous right now, my cheeks might flush. Pets go through that same thing where blood flow will change to different parts of their body depending on the emotional state that they're in. So here we're using the camera to look at things like the eyes, because as their pupil dilates or constricts, the eye temperature will change. We're looking at ear temperature, and we're also looking at paw temperature. That's actually the only place that dogs and cats sweat is from their paws. So as they're getting more excited, sometimes you'll see them starting to sweat from their paws, and we'll pick up that on the thermal camera. We're also looking at heart rate and heart rate variability here. So we're strapping a heart rate monitor on the dog, the same sort of thing that you might use if you're training at home yourself. And we're looking for changes in heart rate and then the variability. So we know heart rate goes up if you're exercising, heart rate goes up if you're excited, heart rate goes up if you're stressed. But then we interpret that by looking at the variability. So if you're in a really flexible state, a positive state, there's a lot of variability. The distance between heartbeats will fluctuate. They'll be really far apart, really close together, and it'll move a lot. And that's a good thing. So if we see high heart rate variability and high heart rate, we know that the animal's in a positive, excited state. If we see high heart rate variability and a low heart rate, we know they're in a positive, sort of relaxed state. If we're looking at stress, that variability go way down because the pet's getting into fight or flight mode. The variability gets very consistent. The beats are uniform. We don't see a lot of that there. That decrease in variability paired with an increase in heart rate is what we see when we're looking at stress. So by looking at both of those indicators along with the thermal imaging and taking other measures like hormones from the saliva or maybe fecal microflora, we can really get a better picture of the emotional state our pets are in from a very objective physiological way. Then we compare that with the behavior on the outside of what they're showing us and really understand more about their state that they're in.
That's really interesting. Now, for people at home that don't have a thermal way to look at their pets,
right. What
are some cues? I mean, most of us know about the wet nose. Nose should be a little
right. Wet.
What are some other cues that people should look for in a happy pet and in a stressed pet?
Okay. In a happy pet, play. Pets are only going to play when they're in a totally non-stressed state, when they feel very safe in their environment and they're in a very positive state. So the more you see your pet playing, no matter the age, obviously younger pets are going to play more than older pets, but play is a fantastic indicator that your pet's in a really good welfare state. As far as looking for stress, it depends on if you're looking at your dog or your cat, the signs will be slightly different, but they're actually very good about giving us signs if we just look for them. So any big changes in behavior that you see, if your dog's usually really social and out and about and always here to greet people and all of a sudden they're a little more shy and they're hanging back, that might be a sign that they're in a state of stress. Same with your cat. If usually they're out and about and very social and then a new person comes over and now they're hiding, maybe they're stressed by that situation. We can also look for more subtle signs, like dogs doing things like licking their lips or yawning in a context when they haven't just eaten or they aren't tired, or doing a full body shake to sort of shake off the stress that they're seeing. So we can look for the more gross, big things about changes in their overall behavior, and then we can look for more subtle signs. But a really happy pet is going to play a lot. They're going to want to be interacting with the other pets in the home and with the people. And you know your pet, so you know when they're in a really happy state.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I had such a great time at the Purina hashtag Better with Pets Summit. It was wonderful. I learned so much, and it validates everything I know, how my life is so much better with pets. And what would I do without my crew, Mr. Z, Nikki, and the dentist? I learned a little bit more about how to understand my pets. I also learned what colors are better suited
for my dog. I just learned such a great deal. I got to meet Tuna and got to meet some wonderful individuals and interview them on various things about for your pet, how pets make your life better. It was a wonderful experience, and I thank Purina for inviting us, and I look forward to coming back next year and learning more. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out Best Bets for Pets on Pet Life Radio for more information on great products and tips for your pets. Also, take a listen on PetLifeRadio.com. We have so many shows with a lot of great information on how your life can be better with pets.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.